Purim is upon us. I've heard from directly here myself, but I've heard from Yitzchak Berkowitz that the purpose of Purim, and especially the drunkenness of Purim, is to arrive at a state where I can know that drunken fog, I can know that everything is good, including the Holocaust, the Churban, the death of a loved one, everything. Get to the point where everything is good. That is the goal, that is the mission of Purim. That as bad as it looks, it is good. And for that, we need on a daily basis to cover our eyes, to know that on a daily basis we need to cover our eyes, and to affirm that on a in the deepest sense, we need to let go of some of our rationality, because our rational mind has a limitation. We give things naturally through our rational mind. We give things labels. This is good and this is bad. And I think that's fair. That's fair and appropriate that we relate to the world. We relate to the world as some things that are good news and things that are bad news. But we need to affirm that on a deeper level, at the end of the day, it will all be clear to us that it is all good news, that there is no bad news. And if we set our sights on that as the mission of Purim, whether we choose to drink in order to achieve that state, or to contemplate and meditate in order to achieve that state, whatever the person needs to do, that becomes the goal. And if that is not where we're heading, then we are missing the accomplishment that Purim can provide. It'll be a little bit hard for you to imagine getting to a point where somebody walked in and reported to you that your closest loved one had just passed away. Say, yeah. Chaim. Yeah. That's what Purim is. That's what Purim is. One day a year where the mask is removed and we are able for a brief moment to glimpse through the event to see that everything is good. It's one of the many challenges that we have, live in a world of paradox, where there are things that we believe and that we feel and that we know that somehow don't compute. They don't compute fully. And we need help to get them to compute. And sometimes we need help to let go of the need to get them to compute. Two possibilities. One is to raise your sense of awareness to the point where things compute even when they otherwise don't compute. Finally, I got it. That's the experience of iyun and learning, where there's the aha moments where things that just don't compute suddenly have a sense of cohesion and they start to compute. And there is another moment. There's a moment where I can let go of the need to have something compute. I don't need to have it compute. I want to talk about an example of that. I think that you'll find that the example relates directly back to this idea that everything is good. Chovas HaLevavos in Shar Avodas Elokim introduces in Perek Ches a paradox. He introduces the question of which is real. Do we make things happen? Or does Hashem make things happen? And he brings a battalion of sukkim to support each of those positions. That the world is an olam ha'asiyah, the world is a place for us to do, and it is our mission, and adam la'amal yulad, a person was put in the world to do and to accomplish, to of course to achieve reward for his doing and his accomplishing. And there are just as many psukim and chazal that support the statement that we do nothing, that Hashem is the master of everything. First of the Hanimamin Emuna Shleima Shabore Yizvarach Shemo Hu Asa Oseh V'Yaaseh L'chol HaMa'asim. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the source of everything. He brings up that difficulty, that paradox, and he tries to resolve it, goes through a number of attempts to resolve the paradox, and his conclusion is that the only answer that he finds meaningful is that you cannot resolve the paradox. Both are true. I am absolutely here to do and to accomplish, and everything is up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if you try to get your head around that, you will go nuts. So says the Chovas HaLevavos, that pursuing the attempt to try to crack and get your head around both of those things simultaneously will lead you to insanity. That is not something that we can pull off. We have to know that there is a paradox in the world, and that paradox is not to be resolved, and that is that we live on two different planes. We live in a reality where we do everything, and we live in a reality where everything is Hashem. Both of those are realities. We need to juggle them both. And I've heard many attempts to try to resolve that on a practical level. I think one of the most compelling answers that I've heard, I think Rav Soloveitchik said to us once in Boston, that when you take three steps forward into Shmoneh Esrei, you are supposed to know that all knowledge comes from Hashem. Atoch Honein Adam Das. All knowledge comes from Hashem. When you take three steps back out of Shmoneh Esrei, you need to learn, because all knowledge is produced by us. And if I don't learn it, I won't understand it. So he's dividing it into some degree into time factors. The one becomes a theme behind the other, meaning knowing that I'm going to go back to davening empowers me to learn, and vice versa. I know in the back of my mind that everything comes from Hashem. I'm going to go back to davening, But I have a time for that. The time for davening. Now is not the time for davening. Now is the time to learn like your life depends on it. To try to crack the Rashi. So it's sort of a little bit of a divide along time and theme, as I understood it. You know, go back to davening, go back to the Beis Medrash. Sort of a bit of a shift along those lines. That's satisfying on a certain level, and I think that it's true. Not that he needs my good housekeeping stamp of approval. I would like to suggest another possibility, which will bring us back to Purim, and that is based on a yesod, a fundamental, that the Altar of Slabodka puts forward. I don't claim that I fully understand it, because his deepest fundamentals require a lifetime to try to understand. But to the extent that I have any grasp on it at all, I have a grasp to realize that when the Mesilas Yesharim says that a person was created l'his aneg al Hashem, that he was created to have pleasure, he means it. That is the sum total of the person's creation was pleasure. That is the sum total, that is why the person was created. No second motive, no second anything. Person was created, l'his aneg al Hashem. To delight, to have pleasure with and in the eternal and intimate relationship with Hashem. That's why we're here, no other reason. Pleasure, it is not surprising that the whole world is running after pleasure. Why is that not surprising? Because that's why we're here. So if something is a reason for why we're here, it's not surprising that there's a whole bunch of people who the Yetzer Hara manages to hijack to try to get it any way they can. They try to buy it. They try to run after it. Pleasure is one of the things that cannot be pursued. It is an outcome. You can't pursue it. It's why we're here. It's why we're created. But you can't pursue it. If you pursue it, you'll end up on drugs. You cannot pursue pleasure. If you want the example of that, the therapists who speak about this, particularly Viktor Frankl, compare it to trying and aiming and intending to fall asleep. What happens if a person intends to fall asleep? He does not fall asleep. If, however, his body is tired and he puts himself into a condition where he can fall asleep and his body needs to sleep, he will fall asleep. You don't need to intend to fall asleep. That is, in fact, works quite against you. If you intend to be happy, for example, you will never be happy. If you intend to fall asleep, you will not fall asleep. Nobody can ever intend to be happy, in spite of the fact that the world has spent 5,700 years trying to disprove that. But it is nevertheless the case, and it will never change. You cannot intend happiness, just like you cannot intend falling asleep. And on that same list of things that you cannot intend is oneg, is pleasure. It is a state that a person experiences as a result of doing that which is meaningful to him, doing that which his neshama responds to. And therefore, if a person does a mitzvah, so he will feel a certain sense of oneg. And that's not because he was just conditioned to feel oneg. It's because his wiring is such that this is what brings him oneg. And so everything in the world is all about how to have pleasure. And there's all sorts of discussions about the levels of pleasure, and the this of pleasure, and the that of pleasure. It's all out there. It's all been discussed. You don't need me for any of that. All sorts of discussions about the pleasure. The bottom line of it is, that's why we're here. And the challenges that we have are the things that bring us the deepest pleasure. And not surprisingly, it is not the accomplishments that bring us the pleasure. It is the planning and the effort. Those are the things that we get the most pleasure from, because accomplishments on the things that are really serious are rare. You don't accomplish happiness, and you don't accomplish, maybe you accomplish building a bridge. But interestingly, the people who are excited about the bridge's completion are not the ones who have the most pleasure. When two beams that have been planned to meet at a certain spot, in fact meet at that spot, then the engineers have a deep surge of pleasure. That is a moment of intense pleasure, because there's a planning. It turns out that human being is the only Bria in the creation of, I heard this from a Rav from the South just this week. Come back to me. He said, all of the other creations, Rav Obermeister, all the other creations have no planning in them. Yehi, Hashem simply said, this is a will, should be, and it is. Yehi. Until it comes to man. Nasa, Adam, Bitzalmenu. Let's plan this. And then, Vayas, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu made man. That's why the human being has deep pleasure from planning. The deep pleasure, of course, that can be hijacked. Obsessive people can hijack that. But there's a deep pleasure from planning something. That's why engineering is such a pleasurable experience for those people who are inclined that way, because it's a planning process, and to plan it out is deeply pleasurable for a person. So it's all about oneg. It's about that we are wired for oneg, and we're purposeful in our oneg. So I would like to suggest that the way to resolve this question of is it all about me and my effort, or is it all about turning it over to Hashem and having an absolute bitachon in Hashem? The answer that I would like to suggest is they are both deeply pleasurable experiences. There's a deep oneg, there's a deep pleasure in digging in and doing and applying myself to the effort, because we're wired to be toilers, we are wired to toil, and the toil gives us pleasure. And there is a deep sense of pleasure when allowing ourselves to let go of our concerns and worries, because we are in the hands of the ultimate one who runs everything. I don't need to know which one is true. I need to know that I'm wired for pleasure. Knowing that I'm wired for pleasure means, of course, there's sometimes going to be spicy, and sometimes going to be hot, and sometimes going to be cold. Why do I not feel the need to resolve the stira, the contradiction of my taste buds? I don't really need to resolve the contradiction to my taste buds, because it's clear to me that the reason why I eat is because I enjoy this and I enjoy this. I don't necessarily enjoy them at the same time, but I enjoy them, and so the common denominator is my pleasure. I don't need to resolve how it is that the same tongue can enjoy sweet, and the same tongue can enjoy bitter and sour. How can the same tongue? I don't need to know. Tell me biologically how it is that the taste buds on my tongue in different ranges and zones on my taste buds and manage to pick up this and pick up that. So why aren't the other taste buds offended? If this is wired to enjoy spicy, and this is wired to enjoy sweet, then how come it doesn't offend? One doesn't offend. You know what? There's probably an answer. Probably, I don't know. Does it bug me? I know that my system, my gustatory system, my tongue was wired for my pleasure. I know that the Kadosh Baruch Hu wired my tongue for my pleasure. And how exactly the wiring works, I may or may not ever come to understand how exactly the wiring works, but it doesn't bother me. Because I know one thing, that the unifying factor is that my tongue was wired for my pleasure. And so it was wired for my pleasure such that sweet is pleasurable, and in a different occasion, the spicy is pleasurable. We are wired for pleasure. The specifics of how a person achieves pleasure is at times through his toil, through his effort, and feeling that he's putting forth, and he's la'amal, and he's struggling, and he's toiling against an opposition, against a challenge, which is why the whole world makes up challenges. They don't have a Torah, so they make up challenges. Very funny, the world. They make up challenges. Not enough challenges in the world. They have to make them up. So they have these little computer games. Right? Thumbs, thumbs, thumbs. A challenge. Now, that little computer game has levels. So it creeps its way up the levels until it's very challenging for you. Tell me. Does the computer care less if you win or lose at level 9? The computer can easily go to level 37, and no human being could possibly, ever in a zillion years, could possibly keep up. What a meaningless challenge. But we invent them because we like challenges. And nobody ever made a baseball field that was 700 yards long. And it's not because there's no room in the world for a 700-yard baseball field. It's because nobody can hit one over the fence. And so they don't make baseball fields that big. And in fact, when they changed the way the bats were made, and they changed the way the density of the balls, they have to expand the field a little bit because it was possible to hit the ball that far. So they made the field a little bigger. Because they're all making up challenges. Because it's deeply pleasurable to be struggling against the challenge. Whether the challenge is a sports achievement, or how fast a person ran, or how fast he drove, or how fast he, you know, whatever it is, or how much money he made. We like challenges. And if we don't have them, we invent them. Because it's deeply pleasurable to have a challenge. So Kodesh Baruch Hu put into our system that we can toil and challenge to the absolute maximum of every ounce of our energy, down to a close kocho, until the last koach in this person's body, I can toil to try to learn Torah. I can toil to try to do mitzvot. I can toil to work on myself and to do chesed and to grow and to midos. Every single ounce of who we are can be put to the task of growing and achieving pleasure. It's a pleasure. A person would see it as a pleasure and wouldn't just see it as getting some grade and getting a mark, and Hashem's marking him down. Good job, bad job, good job, bad job. God, that's boring. What are you talking about? Good job, bad job. The toil. Kodesh Baruch was sharing with the person the pleasure of his toil. And in fact, storing up endless reward for the toil. So there's more going to be more owning. Because when there's toil, there's also the pleasure of accomplishment. And that accomplishment comes in the world to come. And there's a sense, not only did we get pleasure here, if you were to tell a real Talmud Chacham, if you tell a real Talmud Chacham that there's schar for your learning, you know that there's schar for your learning, and tell you you're off the wall. I get all my schar right here. There's nothing more pleasurable than cracking a Tosfos. Don't tell me that there's more schar. That's off the charts. Don't tell me there's more schar than the schar that I already get. And Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in a competition with the person. As hard as the person's working, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is racking up thousands and thousands of points of schar, because the person's putting out effort on his behalf and trying to understand his Torah. And the person can't believe that there's schar for such a thing. It's all just more and more owning. at the same time, when a person feels the tension, when a person feels that there's things in the world that he can't control, and he feels that he's a little overwhelmed, and he feels that there's things he doesn't understand, and he can turn it over to the loving and all-knowing and all-powerful Ribbono Shel Olam, that sense of the relief and the intimacy, the closeness of bitachon, of turning it over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when I know that it's an absolutely perfect thing, that turning over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is as well ultimately and infinitely pleasurable. And it taps into all of the person's emotional being and all of the pleasure that a person can possibly have to feel the closeness and to feel the intimacy and to feel taken care of and to feel that every single one of his needs is addressed in the best possible way. That is also infinitely pleasurable. And so you don't have to decide, well, which is it really? Is it really that I'm putting forth toil and effort and making things happen, or is it really that Hashem is running the show? You don't need to address that. Because the answer is, your tongue handles both, because it's wired for your pleasure. Your essence is wired for pleasure, and you can handle them both, because they're both infinitely pleasurable. You don't need to come up with a resolution that would somehow click them all together. It's just like, I don't need to come up with a resolution as to how my tongue does it. I have this pleasure and I have this pleasure. As a matter of fact, I never spent 15 seconds thinking about it. Maybe they taught me about it when I was a kid in school, about different zones of the tongue, and it kind of remained as one of those many useless pieces of information that I picked up when I was a kid, but I didn't do anything with it. I just don't really, I'm not bothered by it. Just, I know my tongue is wired for my pleasure. We are wired that way, Rebosai. And because we are wired that way, there needs to be the pleasure of tshuva, for example. There's a pleasure of tshuva, which is the oneg of coming closer in the relationship with Hashem. That's part of the bitachon system. There is also oneg in learning Torah. That's part of the other oneg system of the amelus, of the amel, of the toil, of the struggle. Each one has its pleasure. Shabbos has its pleasure because Shabbos is the intimacy. Each thing has its pleasure because we're wired for pleasure. Enters Purim as being just the singular focus, but on that day we try to pull it all together. And try to pull it all together, you got to be drunk. You're not going to pull it all together using your rational mind. You want to pull it all together, so there's only one way. You have to suspend your rationality in order to pull it all together. Put your rationality aside, and somehow oneg makes everything make sense. I don't know why this oneg and this particular challenge and this particular pleasure and this particular intimacy, you know what? At this point, it doesn't matter, because all that I can sense is oneg. It is a pure sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in the world only the Yisra'anik HaLashem. We're only here for pleasure, nothing else. The same Rabbi Obermeister asked the question, says, Mishenichnas Adar Marbi B'Simcha. So he said, with all the other Yemim Tovim, we know that the Simcha of Simchat HaTorah, the Simcha of Cheirus, redemption, the Simcha associated with each of the holidays. What's the Simcha associated with Adar? Marbim b'Simcha. What Simcha? About what? Over what? What's the Simcha? And the answer is Simcha Tachayim. It's being happy that we're alive. You read a book about called Lieutenant Birnbaum. He quotes there a discourse that was given by Kleisenberger Rebbe Zichron of the Bracha, and the first Yom Kippur after liberation in the camps. Everybody was still in the camps, had no place to go. So the camps became, basically turned into DP camps, displaced persons, because there really wasn't any place for them to go. And until everybody kind of settled out, it took time. Klezenberg Rebbe was a great, great tzaddik. The person whose heart beat with the pulse of Klal Yisrael, great tzaddik. Finally, after struggling and suffering through the war, he suffered enormously. It was impossible to describe his suffering, the entire family that he lost, his wife and all of his young children, the fact that he himself would not allow himself any of the leniencies that he allowed for everybody else. He did not permit himself any of those leniencies, and he was attaching himself to the mitzvot of Hashem with a preparedness to give back his neshama at any given moment, and he did that throughout the years of the camps. So really, an amazing story. If you ever read the story about the Klezenberger Rebbe and his biography, an amazing story. And both pre and during and post-war years, it's a remarkable topic. Imagine first Yom Kippur, where he could daven as he would wish to daven without any constraints. Imagine his preparation on Erev Yom Kippur. Well, during Shabbos Shuvah, he had said to the inmates, he had said to the now supposedly free people, the shards of a people that were left with, he said, "You don't have a father anymore in this world. I'll be your father. I'll be your father." So, Erev Yom Kippur, he was holed up in a room that they had given him to prepare himself for this first Yom Kippur. And a knock on the door. And there's a girl at the door. And she said, "My father used to give me a bracha on Erev Yom Kippur. You said, you're my father. I want a bracha." Klezenberger Rebbe took a shmata and put it on her head and gave her a bracha. Little did he realize that she was a front. She was the one, the Nachshon, who was willing to test the water. And behind her was an entire stream of every single girl in the camp. And that's what he did. That's what Erev Yom Kippur was. One by one, he gave every one of these girls a bracha. Father gives a bracha to his children. And that's how he spent the Erev Yom Kippur. Now it's time for Kol Nidre, and he got up to speak at Kol Nidre. He took out the Al-Chait, he took out the Vidui, he went through one by one through the Vidui and he threw everything out. Who had possessions to be jealous of? Who had this? Who had that? He went through one by one. Who did any of these things? Who could have done any of these things? Who had the energy to do any of them? Close the master. So what's left to do? We have a mitzvah of tshuva on Yom Kippur. It's a mitzvah of tshuva on Yom Kippur. What are we supposed to do? And the Klezenberger Rebbe said, "Every one of us knows the days when we woke up in the morning and felt a tinge of jealousy towards the ones who did not wake up." Every one of us knows that there were moments where we were jealous of those who did not have to face another day. That we all need to do tshuva. And there's nobody here who doesn't have to do tshuva on that avera of not celebrating life. And that is Purim. The celebration, Mishanichnas Adar Marbin B'Simcha, it's not the Simcha of Simchas HaTorah, it's not the Simcha of Simchas HaCheiros, it's the Simchas HaChaim. I am celebrating the fact that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has granted me life with all of the oneg implicit in the life, no matter how inexplicable the pain and the difficulty is. It is the gift that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has granted, the gift of life. And Klal Yisrael was on the edge of annihilation and destruction on Purim, and when they were saved, the mitzvah was one mitzvah: celebrate life. You were on the edge of annihilation. Celebrate the fact that you are alive. Kadosh Baruch Hu has granted you life. Celebrate that He has granted you life. And that's the simcha. And that's Mishanichmas Adar Marvin B'Simcha. And what are we celebrating about life? We're celebrating about life the fact that we are the Am Midushne Onek. We are the people who are filled with Onek. Anybody else in the world would want to have any glimpse at all of the Onek of a Jew, he would have to get drunk. Unfortunately, though, many Jews have forgotten about Onek. But the nice news is, you don't have to look far, you just have to look inside yourself. And you will find that the Amelus, and the more you toil, the more Oneg you will feel. And you will find that the more bitachon, the more you turn over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and let go of concerns and worries and know that you're in good hands, the more Oneg you will feel. And if you can't put those two together, just remember your tongue. It doesn't work together, but know that you are wired for Oneg. And the Ezra Hashem Rabbah going through that process will be zocha to akiyam uvekiblu, to a new level of acceptance of the work and the toil of Torah on the one hand, and the beauty and the intimacy of our bitachon on the other, and we'll be able to emerge from Purim ready for Geula, be'ezer Hashem, for HaKadosh Baruch to show us yet a whole new dimension of the Oneg that awaits us. Very much important.
But that litter, how do you die? Even through being sugar and everything.
You can only do it if you're drunk. You can't do it. You're right. You're using your rational head, you're not going to be able to do it. And it's more than that. You're supposed to relate to the event as bad. You're supposed to go to the Shibahas, right? You're not supposed to send them a congratulation letter, you know? That's right. So that means that on a rational level, you're not supposed to be able to lose that. But on a deeper level, you're supposed to know that it's
so that would be the trick letter, the rational.
Absolutely. Call Sir Rabbi.
I'm studying the rational level, being B'Simcha inside and saying both Dianas on the rational level. How do those two things fit?
Only if you know that that is Rabbi Hashem, the Oneg associated with the Rabbi Hashem. Otherwise, it's not.
And in terms of an event that is toil, that's hard,
right? Because we're wired for that toil.
Other good things that are pleasurable.
Yes.
Something that's bad that's happening, seemingly bad that's happening to us.
So there it's not pleasurable because of the toil. There it's pleasurable because of the intimacy of the relationship. If you ask anybody who's going through terrible, terrible yisurim, they feel a closeness to Hashem that nobody else feels. The person could only hope to feel on the Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur.
The rest of the usual things.
No, thank you very much. I'm running. Bless.